My name is Steve Atkinson. I am currently a program coordinator at New Mexico State University of Alamogordo, and I have been in the EMS field about 12 years, been a paramedic for going on 10 now. Been in the fire service, the EMS service, flight service, a critical care paramedic as well. I've been an educator for 6 years and been in my current position for about 4 months. July 14th, 2002, I was working in a small town and only been there about 7 weeks, which turned out to be pretty important information later on. I'll explain why. But on my one morning, I'd been running a lot lately, that a couple times a day, actually, just trying to burn off some energy. And one morning, it was about 5:45 in the morning, really unsure what had happened because of loss of memory from the head injury. But my first memory was dropping to my knees and hitting the ground because I was on a railroad track and a train was going over me. Happened about that quick. Hit my knees, hit kind of curled up in a ball, hit the ground. Train went over me. So I was on my right side. The train immediately hit my shoulder and my did a lot of damage to my shoulder, but in I immediately started going under the train, kind of rolled several times. Somehow ended up on my back, face up, in the prone position. Supine position. And the train was still going over me. So this was my second or third car back. I'm already realizing I'm underneath a train that's going pretty fast, about 35 miles an hour, 65 cars. Train continued to go over me for quite a while. I passed out, lost consciousness, came to, train was already gone. For the next 5 hours I laid there, no one could find me. This was at 5:45 in the morning. About 10:20, I had a second, started to feel the ground move a little bit, and here comes another train. Figure my luck had probably ran dry. I just decided to roll off. But by now I'd tried this several times. I couldn't move. I had a broken pelvis, 3 breaks to my pelvis. Continued to try to roll over as the ground started to move more and more. Could not quite get over that rail with a broken pelvis, amongst a lot of other injuries. But I did. I rolled over, finally got over that railing, the railroad rail, and rolled down to the bottom of the little embankment that the train is built on. Passed out again. Came to just as the train was about to go by. Lifted my hand up, tried to wave to the engineer, hoping somebody would see me. Realizing just how tall that train was laying on the ground, it was quite a ways up there. I thought there is no chance anybody saw me. It's about 10:30 in the morning now. Train goes by. I had a little loss of consciousness here and there. Started to continue what I had started up on the tracks, which was assessing myself, and it was a pretty horrific thing to sit and assess myself. I suddenly put new meaning to the word, you're the most important person on scene when it comes to safety. Being a paramedic with critical care experience, I knew right off the bat there was a lot of immediate issues, but the one thing that I continued to remember was I was very hot, and that was good. I wasn't in shock. My stomach was very rigid. I knew I had done some damage internally. My hand was crushed by the train going over it, so I lost 2 fingers, my index finger and my thumb, and it torn most of the palm off. So when I waved the engineer down, I had this skin flapping back and forth on my hand, which really kind of was a little unsettling, so I immediately stopped doing that. I continued to try to assess myself. I knew I couldn't breathe very well because when I tried to scream, it's kind of a groan came out. Subsequently, the neighbor brought her dogs in the house because she thought there was a bear out there. There was a lot of bear up there in the north part of the state. Tenderness to my side also confirmed I had broken some ribs at least. That had some injury to my lung as well. I had my clavicle was broke. My scapula was broke twice. So I had no movement to my left arm. I wasn't able to raise it up to flag anybody down or even throw rocks at a house. I mean, I was thinking of anything I could do. I wasn't very far from my home, maybe 15 yards from the house, the back of the house, but only about 10 yards from the, or only about 10 feet from the back of the fence. But there was a lot of tall weeds, so nobody could see me. I continued to try to figure out things to do and trying to think of anything, just grasping at straws. What could I do to get someone's attention? Well, it turns out the engineer did see me. He saw something, sent a man bus over to check it out. A van pulls up. I hear the creaking of the tires and I hear the dinging of the little bell as the door opens and hear feet walking around. I start screaming as loud as I could. This gentleman walks over. Pretty interesting. The first thing he says is, "Gene, do you need an ambulance?" And I said, "Yes." He gets on the phone. He says a few words. He says, "They want to know if you're going to sue us." I said, "No, I'm not going to sue you." He calls 911. I said, "Tell him that Steve, it's the paramedic that's supposed to be on shift today. They're probably looking for me. I was supposed to be on shift 2.5 hours ago." He tells him that. And I hear the ambulance within about 2 minutes. First thing I do is tell the guy I need a lot of water. He insists that that's probably not a good thing. And I told him I'm a paramedic. I didn't care. I was dry as a bone. I drank some water. I waited for them. Obviously, EMS came up, and first thing I remember is their heads kind of coming over the hill, and they're looking at me thinking, "Wow, it is Steve." And then they turn around, and it is Steve. And the next guy comes over the hill, and he turns around, "Wow, it really is Steve." Kind of just almost everybody's in disbelief. I'm the medic on shift again. I had an intermediate the day before that told me, "I'm really struggling with my IVs. I'm going to need some help." So there's a lot of things going through my mind what to do, and the first thing I could think of was launch a helicopter because we're about 250 miles from any trauma facility, but definitely 200 miles from even a medium-sized hospital. So they immediately got on the phone, called, and the doc says, "Well, if he was hit by a train, do we really need to launch a helicopter?" And they said, "Well, it's Steve, and he's talking to us." And they said, "Okay." I had just set up the protocols for carrying narcotics on the ambulance for the paramedics, which was kind of a new addition to their fire department. So I just talked to the doctor the day before for about an hour. They launched, which was good because later on to find out they were completely out of fixed wings or rotor wings. They sent me a fixed wing. That was the last one. And they did have a call for that about 20 minutes later for a burn victim who ended up dying shortly after anyway. So it was a good thing we launched quick. Maybe not good for him, but certainly good for me. Immediately they said, "Okay, what do we do, Steve? Have you seen your foot?" And I said, "Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I can imagine." I couldn't see. When I looked down, all I could see was one foot sticking up. It turns out that it was almost completely amputated. It was sheared off at the bottom, right above the ankle, the bottom of the tib fib, and then it was dislocated out of the ankle joint. So it was pretty crooked. The medial artery was severed completely. And looked like I'd probably lose my foot. I knew my hand was in bad shape, and I knew my stomach wasn't good or my lungs, so I knew I was in a lot of trouble. They launched, and they said, "Steve, what do we do?" I said, "Shove a backboard under me, load me up on the gurney, and get me out of here." And, the first thing, "Well, what about your C-spine?" I said, "I'll hold my C-spine, just go." So they load me up. I tell them, "You got one chance at the IV. You told me yesterday you're horrible at it, so you better get this." Looking back, it's probably not the best thing to tell the guy. He's under enough stress. They got me to the hospital. There was another guy in there, poor guy. He was at the Whitman Center, large shooting range, and he had gotten shot in the hand and went into his leg. So poor guy was like playing second fiddle to me. It was pretty bad. You think you get shot with a gun, you should get most important, or certainly get a lot of attention in the ER, but he didn't, poor guy. They cathed me, found blood in my urine, and immediately decided we've got a lot of problems going on here. Didn't put a chest tube in me. Didn't decompress. My sats were okay. So the doctor drove with me out to the hospital or out to the airport and gave me a total of 10 milligrams of morphine, which, as you can imagine, I was 220 pounds. It didn't do much at all. I was still very conscious, still with it. And they drove me out, loaded me up. The flight nurse said, "Are you in a lot of pain?" I said, "I'm in a horrible amount of pain." And that ambulance ride was horribly bumpy. So the flight nurse gave me some Versed, and that's pretty much, I must be a wimp because that's all I remember at that point. She gave me very little, she told me later. Loaded up, flew me to Albuquerque, And as I landed, I was, first said was wearing off. I started listening to what people were saying, and they continuously asked me, "Are you okay? Talk to us." I was just trying to listen, because it's amazing. You can hear 10 people talking, but when your adrenaline's kicked in, you can hear everything they're saying, and you process it pretty well. I spent the next, well, they told me I'd lose my hand and my foot when I went into surgery. They said, "You're going to lose it." And I said, "Okay." Not like I could say very much else. Went into surgery 6 hours later. They worked on my abdomen, my hand. They debrided it, did a little bit of cleaning up. Didn't do a whole lot. Put my foot back on. And they wanted to see how long it would take and how well it would take. So I spent the next 3 weeks in and out of sanity, really. I don't remember any of the 3 weeks. My hematocrit was 11 and my hemoglobin was 4. Most people would say that's unbelievable. I'm sure some people have heard of lower numbers, but I've never heard of anything that low. I was out of the hospital in 31 days, which is exactly how many days Medicaid needs to pay, how many days they need you to stay in a hospital for them to pay for their institutional Medicaid. Because after 7 weeks at the fire department, I didn't have insurance. So I was there 31 days. I sat up a total of 3 times. I was 220 when I went in. I was 160 pounds even when I came out. Everything had atrophied. I was just, there was nothing left and no muscle, no anything. I was just skeleton. Sunken in eyes, looked pretty bad. I loaded up when they told me I could go home. I went back to Silver City, stayed with my girlfriend at the time. She's an RN. She packed my wound for me and my foot, and she got me into a wheelchair, and I spent about 3 weeks recovering before the next thing happened. My dad came out to see me from North Carolina, showed up there within about 10 hours next morning. He got there pretty late. Next morning, 8 o'clock, he got up. It was my first day of actually standing up and walking. I was supposed to wait 6 weeks. I waited 3 weeks. My dad came to me, came to see me the next morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. He got up. I asked him what he'd like to do. He looked out the window, and he went into cardiac arrest, 57 years old. He passed away there. My friends came in, worked him. I was doing CPR, opening an airway. Somebody brought some oxygen to me the night before. He had a little bit of trouble breathing from the altitude. So I connected the nasal cannula and opened his airway, tried to work at what I originally thought was a seizure, but didn't take too long to realize he was going into a code. My friend showed up. They worked him. He actually came up to tell me he was pretty sick. So his wife produced a DNR, basically, from the Duke University, a letter from Duke University's cardiologist that said he would sign a death certificate if he had any problems while he was gone. So it kind of let me know how sick he was. We called it. They took him away. There you are in a room with your girlfriend and your stepmom, and you're kind of thinking things through, and I get a knock at the door, and my ex-wife finally served me with divorce papers, which I've been wanting for 2 years. So she filed those while I was in the hospital. Pretty troubling day, to say the least. 6 weeks from the time I got out of the hospital to the time I went back to work, I went back as the chief flight medic for the service I worked for before I left. They had a position open, it worked out well, and they let me go back to work. I couldn't carry the Life Pack 12 across the tarmac. I couldn't do much of anything. Couldn't lift a patient, but they let me go back to work for my medical health, or my mental health, excuse me, more than anything else. And I spent next few months recuperating, pretty much worried about what was going to happen next. They told me I could never go back to work, and I would never work again. I certainly never work as a paramedic. Interestingly enough, I went to get disability, and they turned me down. You get hit by a train, you can't get disability, sounds like. So I went through a lot of the problems of, well, what am I going to do for work and so on, and that's when I realized, I think majority of the time, doctors tell you that to inspire you to go back to work. At least that's the way it feels for me. I can do anything that EMS can, that I need to do in EMS. My biggest problem is taking knots out of shoelaces without having a thumb and a forefinger. It's kind of a difficult thing to do, but I have learned to adapt, and I can still intubate. The injury was my right hand. I do most of the physical work of intubation with your left hand, so I can do pretty much anything I need to do. The only thing I've really had to adapt to is starting IVs left-handed. And so I think if I had to give any recommendation to anybody of what being a patient has taught me is listening to someone when they say something. Unfortunately, I had a lot of good listeners around when I was talking. And going through things like that certainly make you change your point of view. So I've taken that to heart when I talk to people who have gone through a lot in life and they say something that I may step back and think that's a little bit different or unique. It's their viewpoint of how they perceive priorities in life and things like that. I'm back to work. I've worked in several fields, fire department, passed the agility test with no problem. I do have some arthritis, some pain when I walk, but for the most part, it doesn't affect me. I'm 39. This happened when I was 32. Just to sum a couple of things up, when I was 30, I was the healthiest guy I know. I've never broken a bone. When I was 30 years old, they diagnosed me with testicular cancer. When I was 31, they diagnosed me again, but it had gone into my lymph nodes. So I spent three surgeries and about a whole year between surgery, recovering, and chemotherapy. I was not used to that. That kind of threw me off, but I had no idea what I was really getting prepared for to take that head on. I was a very healthy person. I think that train accident just might have taken the wind out of me had I not already prepared through a medical illness. So it was, to say the least, it prepared me for a lot of things I was about to experience. I still feel pretty healthy, and for the most part, most people look at me would not think I was ever hit by a train, but it's an amazing story, and I hope it inspires anybody that can take away from it, at least reevaluate your priorities, I guess is the best thing I can say. That's it.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.